mention it. Ram doesn't have it about Negel Vasek. Doesn't have it. The reason is that the Rambam considered that to be part of the medical writings of the Gemara. See, there are certain medical writings in the Gemara. In terms of medical advice, is nothing more than the medical advice that was prevalent at the times. See, like you might look into where Rav Moshe Feinstein might have a tshuva. He might bring in some medical advice, see, but it's only medical advice at the times. 200 years from now, that advice might very well be obsolete. You see? So the point is, those things in the Gemara, which are mentioned in the way of medical, have no real value, significance, in terms of Mesorah. You know, it just happened to be that Chazal were very up to date on everything in the sciences of the times. And this was the medical science of the times. As a matter of fact, there's a Gemara that deals with mermaids. A mermaid. You know, what's the halacha of a mermaid? The tame, this and that. Yeah. The question is, how could they deal with that? It doesn't exist. The answer is Chazal didn't know whether it existed or not, but they were told by the Greeks that it does exist. So they said, well, if it exists, let's see, what would the halacha be? And I mean, assuming that it exists, so they had to work out the possibilities, you see? But Chazal didn't have time to go deep sea diving to find out whether these things exist now. So they merely accepted what they, the facts from the world of biology, you know, whatever the biologists of the time thought. Biologists at that time, some of the things they thought were wild. But then when it comes to halacha, so they have to sit down and figure out what would the halacha consequences be of such a being, right? So they have to, so what they had to do was to work it out logically. If there was such a being, what would halacha be? Would it be metame, not metame? All these possibilities. See? Yeah, it's true. But the fact of whether these things exist or not, Chazal depended on them, just like today. Rav Moshe Feinstein, if he wants to know, if they tell him about a certain animal, a certain, thing, he's not a botanist or a biologist. He relies on the scientific data that has been accumulated by the scientists, and based upon that, he's going to give his psak. You know what I mean? That's the way it always was that way, see? Because from the Shemayim, God, when God gave the Torah, he didn't give biology. Biology is not part of it. Biology was given over to man as a part of his ability to conquer nature. See, generation after generation, you know what I mean? But God didn't, God never really gave a finished system of biology. The only thing he gave was a way of life, philosophy. Der Chaim, which is the Torah, see? So therefore, that's why you find some strange things in Gemaras. You look at certain things in Gemaras, you find, they'll tell you to eat this, eat that, you'll say, oh boy, they're crazy. It's nothing to do with the Gemara, just assumed, accepted this because that was the best medical advice at the time. Now, of course, when we look at that medical advice, it looks foolish to us. You see? Now. But if it's always the way it is. 200 years from now, our medical advice will look very foolish. You see what I mean? That's the way it is because certain things, a man's mind is presumptuous. In areas he doesn't know, it takes guesses, and those guesses are usually wrong. See?
So what do we do today about medical
laws? It's interesting. I think I mentioned to you, though. I mentioned like certain things like Aristotle, for instance, or the Rambam has. Rambam says if a person has a lot of sex, the hair on his legs get very heavy. Did I mention that to you?
Yeah, Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, yeah? So yeah, he says you get bald. You get bald, lose your hair in the head, you know? Aristotle actually made that observation. Where did he observe from? Because he observed that the eunuchs that were castrated didn't have much hair in the legs, and they never got bald. Eunuchs, they used to serve the king, but they used to castrate them. See?
They guard the harem.
Of course, the harem. They used to take care of the harem.
So
they castrated them. So when they were kids, you know, they castrated them when they were kids. So the thing is, so they noticed that they never had much hair in the legs, and never had baldness. So they assume it's because they don't have any sex. You see? But the truth of the matter is, that's not exactly the reason why. The reason why is because they don't have the hormone. Because they're castrated. You see, they didn't know about hormones then. You know what I mean? So like the deductions weren't exactly...
Right at the time.
Yeah, it was small. It was a sharp observation. So it's an observation. But at the time, it seemed very rational. Just like a lot of our observations today might seem very rational. And I'll give you an example of me. Until very recently, almost 2-3 years ago, people they used to think, scientific world believed that sugar causes diabetes. A person who eats sugar gets diabetes. And they found that has nothing to do with it recently, last year or two. Also recently with salt and high blood pressure. They used to think that if you take salt, you get high blood pressure. Now they claim it's not true. Certain people, the kidneys can't handle salt, that's what happens. But just as a general precaution, it doesn't do anything. In other words, if your kidneys can handle salt properly, not taking salt is not going to help you a bit, not going to lower your pressure at all. Don't do it. Yeah? But, so a lot of these things, there's the world, people, you see, what was the pshat? It's the same type of mistake, because they noticed that there's an excessive amount of sugar in the urine. right, or in the blood. So they assume, because your intake of sugar is too much. They figured, why does the person's pancreas, they notice people who eat a lot of sugar, they say, get diabetes. But the reason isn't because they eat a lot of sugar, the reason is because they eat a lot of calorie intake. It's the calorie intake which is worse than the sugar intake. You know? And so these things, until you get the precise, takes years and years. And it's the same thing over there, just like over there with the eunuchs. First thing they notice, they're not having sex, so you don't get bald, you know? And then it's not because of that, it's because of the fact that, you know, this is the way scientific knowledge progresses, you know what I mean? You make a general guess and then you get more specific. So the point is, a lot of things in the Gemara, which really, you know, medical medicine at the time sounds weird to us because at that time that was the best knowledge we had at the time, you know? And it was before Louis Pasteur, it was before all these things, they didn't know about microbes or anything. Sometimes you wonder about the observations they made were pretty smart for the base of knowledge that they had. As a matter of fact, the Rambam in his time says that medicine is not a science. He says so. He says it's not a science because it's not the point. It's more or less guesswork. See, that's what, even today it is that way. It's true to matter. Even today, I mean, logic spent. As a matter of fact, my great uncle was recently passed away of cancer this year, you know. So I asked, they didn't know what he had. They were taking tests for a couple of weeks, found out it was cancer. So I was talking to the resident doctor there. He says, what do you think this is a science? He says, we don't know what a guy has. He comes in here. He says, we give him tests. He says, what are we going to do? We have to do something. He says, we give him tests after tests, you know, and if something shows up, we're lucky. And if not, well, maybe we'll try some more tests, you know. I mean, that's the way, even today, with all modern science, I mean, I don't think that medicine today is still such a perfected area. It's a lot of guesswork. A lot of guesswork. So, it's hard for them to know what's going on inside the body. Very difficult to know what's going on. You have a thrombosis or an embolus traveling through the body, clots up somewhere. It's very hard to know what's happening. Well, how are the arteries doing? Are they clear? Are they not clear? Still a lot of guesswork. So that's the story, as far as that's concerned. So the Rambam did not have the halacha of nagel vasa, because the Rambam maintained, it would seem, that this was part of the medical knowledge of the time. Medical knowledge, so the Rambam didn't put it in the Arach HaZaka. See? He only puts in the Arach HaZaka that medical knowledge which he thinks is correct on his date. Nothing from the previous date. You know what I mean? So that's the story but however, the Machaber does have it. And the Machaber maintains, the Machaber was a Kabbalist. So he believed in Kabbalah. He maintains that there is Kabbalistic value to it.
That's what I'm saying. Believe about it.
That's what I'm saying. Right. That there's Kabbalistic value to it. Now you have to understand, as soon as you say Kabbalistic, immediately people have all kinds of superstitious notions coming to mind, right? But in terms of the halacha, everybody's moda whatever is up to Kabbalah, halacha is not is a separate area than Kabbalah. Separate area. So that a person is not bound by Kabbalah. He's bound by halacha, not by Kabbalah. See? So therefore, that part of the Shulchan Aruch, the person that deals with anything that is Kabbalistic, you're not bound by it halachically. It's a different.
So what does that mean with us today? As far as Nagel Vasa goes.
Well, let me explain to you. There's another reason why you have to have Tilsa Daim in the morning, not because of the Ruach Ra, you see, for another reason, because you're supposed to wash your hands before Tefillas Shacharis. See, that's the main reason. See, now that is halacha. That's like the Kohanim used to wash themselves from the Kiyor before Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. That you're mechuyav to do. That's why the right way to do it is to do it in shul right before you daven. Because it's some of the tefillah, right before tefillah, so you wash for the purpose of tefillah. That's the right way to do it.
Okay, but when I heard about
the Rambam says there's no such thing as shadim. No such thing as shadim. Now what the Rashi means, when Rashi mentions shadim, I want you to know something. Whatever Rashi mentions is usually a medrash. It's from a medrash somewhere. Now, whenever you say shaydim, the question is, what exactly does shaydim mean? Does it mean he's flying around, you know what I mean? Or does it have another philosophical meaning? It's not pshutik mashmo, it doesn't mean exactly literally. The Rambam maintains it's not literal. See? Now, Rashi, you can't blame Rashi, because Rashi just brings down the medrash. That's all Rashi does. That's all it does. Rashi brings down, that's not Rashi's own pshat. Very seldom you see Rashi's pshat. Once in a while, this is Vani Omer, I say. Usually he's just quoting Midrashim. Now whatever the Midrashim, Rambam maintains that none of those Midrashim can be interpreted literally. Midrashim have to be interpreted allegorically. See? So what is meant by Shadim is really has an allegorical meaning, and not a literal meaning of Shadim flying around. I know. Well, there are people, you have to understand, people tend to be superstitious. That's the way it is. People, by nature, look for this type of thing. You know what I mean? Well, so people are, it's like fairy tale time, you know, like children enjoy this type of thing. And when a lot of people, when they get older, they're still basically kids, you know, they still have the same emotions. People look in the horoscope every day. Why? They really believe it. They live by this stuff. Astrology, it's a big thing. But by nature, a person is superstitious, and a person wants to believe that his wishes can control, he can control the universe through these things, you know? It's tremendous. That's why savage man, primitive man, as it were, all these rites that they do, all these things, are just a method of controlling the external reality. You know what I mean? If I jump this way, well, this will happen. If I jump that way, that will happen. All kinds of crazy things, you know? And even self-torture they do. It's crazy. The Indian sun dance. You ever see that? They do. What? No, I mean the American Indian sun dance. They take skewers, you know, like with metal things with hooks. They hook it into their flesh. And they walk around the thing, and they have to. I think they eventually have to pull it out of their chest, and big hunks of flesh come out of it. They still, as a matter of fact, it's illegal in the United States, but I think that they still do it. I think there are some places it's illegal, but they still, if I'm not mistaken, I think they still do it. I have something at home on it. They still do it, but they don't let the government know that. Some of them will still believe in it. I'm sure a lot of them are more modernized. But the point is, you have to realize that the entire world was steeped in this type of thing. And take the time of the Torah. And regardless, historically, whatever you're going to say, the time of the Torah, the rest of the world was steeped in all this kind of nonsense. Besides the Jews. Jews were the only nation that didn't have it. There isn't one, if I ever find anything. You ever find any of these things in the Torah? I mean, forget about any perushim in the Torah, but just look openly at the Torah. Is there any halacha in the Torah like that to destroy your body yet or anything? The only thing that is mila. Mila, I mean, circumcision is supposed to be, the medical profession agrees as even it's healthy for you. But there's nowhere you find the Torah stuff like crazy stuff like this, you know? But every other tribe at that time, all the primitive tribes, they all had this crazy stuff. And the reason is we say that not because we are intellectually superior, that we're so much better. Well, the point is we were fortunate that we had Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, and we had God gives the Torah. See, that's what.
Thing like the dead bird on your stomach.
Well, Moshe Feinstein about this, asked him about that, whether they should do that, and he said that he says we don't do these things.
Well, he said he did it to him, and it worked. It helps, you know.
If it helps, of course. It might help the person get out of this situation. You see. Because he believes in it, but it shows you that his mind is completely gone. In other words, in every other area, he's living like a sugar nut. Like a nut. Now, living like a nut has certain benefits. Agreed. But the question is, do you want the benefits, and also take the consequences, right? You understand?
Yeah.
Alright. So that's the story. Does that answer your question about the shading? Anything else?
Yeah, one other question I have. Whatever his opinion is,
yes. So you have to know when and where to do this. I mean, it's not the... For a person certainly should feel proud of the fact, happy that he has senses, but when you say the badge of the king, I mean, it's like a little bit metaphor. Yeah, I mean, you press me proud of it doesn't mean God didn't say to wear it outside. I mean, I don't know if he has to wear it outside. The Mishnah Berurah says the worst thing you could do is bad if it goes and it touches the ervah. In other words, that's something. That's what.
What? Touch the what?
If the tzitzis touch the ervah, you know, if it goes underneath the person's underwear, that's wrong. It's bezin mitzvah. See, that's something else. There's two halachas in regard to a mace. Actually, everything that has to do with a mace revolves around these two halachas essentially. One is that you're not allowed to be mevaza the mace. You're not allowed to do anything disrespectful, degrading to the mace. And two is that a person's body must be allowed to disintegrate. So you're put in a state of where in which it can disintegrate. See? Those two halachas. Those are two halachas. Okay? Two basic things.
Well, it's disrespectful. Yeah. It has to be able to degrade.
That's right, disintegrate. Right. Now, the thing is that any attempt at preservation of the body is prohibited, and also any degrading action is prohibited. What's the reason for these two things? The reason for these two things is as follows. Essentially, a person is supposed to recognize. A person has to recognize that the guf, the body, is not really the essence of man. The essence of man is something which lives within, exists within his body, but his physical self is not the essence of man. It's a vehicle. It's a vehicle. Right. Okay. Now the thing is, since it is a vehicle, so for the any attempts to preserve it, you see, is ipso facto an attempt to maintain that the body is the man. See? Because why do you want to preserve it? Because why do people want to be preserved after death? Some people want to be preserved. Big mausoleums, things like that. Why? Because they want to maintain that they're still alive, which means that that which is there still is something. We maintain it's not true. We maintain it is nothing. The man is gone. This is his goof, his body, the shell, which his soul used during his lifetime. But actually, it is not really the man.
You're saying the body is not the man. Is important to the soul. You try to preserve it. You're saying this is the most important thing.
You're saying when you try to preserve the body, what you're saying is the man in some way is here. You're trying to preserve him, right? In no way is the man here. See? That's why.
The body is important, that it's trying to make the person still here.
They're trying to say that the body is the person, that this is the person. But the truth of the matter is, this is nothing of the person. This is only something which was used by the individual. You see? Simultaneously, you're not allowed to degrade. Nevertheless, you're not allowed to degrade the body. Why? Because a degradation to the body would not be in order, because the body was used in something which is associated with the soul of the individual and was used by the individual during his lifetime. So it's like a vehicle, a tashmish kedusha, a vehicle since it still was a vehicle of the soul, it was used by the soul to perform certain mitzvahs and things. So therefore, you can't have it degraded either. See, it has accidental, because it was used by the soul. It has a certain value, which you can't do a certain kedusha, so to speak. That's why you can't degrade it. See, okay. So therefore, you can't. On the one hand, you can't degrade it. On the other hand, you're not supposed to preserve it, you see? So that's why Yahadus maintains that a person should be placed in the ground in which his body disintegrates and returns to its original state. That's it, which means it breaks down into its chemical components.
The first would be not to do anything disrespectful, and the second thing is to be able to disintegrate it. And the goof is just a vehicle in any attempt to preserve the body.
Things like this. That's why they have holes in the bottom of the coffin. So that the person should be returned to the ground. He's lying on the ground, so to speak. The earth, he's not trying to protect him, to preserve him, to prevent him from disintegrating. See? That's why they have the holes in the bottom of the coffin.
No, it's illegal.
First of all, the reason why people spend so much money on coffins and all these type of things, it's an emotion. What are they? I mean, isn't it stupid to bury a man, to put a coffin like that into the ground, the expensive thing?
Yeah, right, good wood.
Good wood, expensive wood, hundreds of dollars, thousands something.
Yeah.
Thousands of dollars. What's the reason for it? The reason is because they are getting carried away into thinking that somehow or other this is a benefit to the man where he's going. I mean, it can't be explained any other way. They think, well, we have to honor him now by this. What, honor who? Where? What? What are you, you know what I'm saying? I mean, in their imagination, they feel, well, he's in that nice coffin there. All the little, you know, they make like a bed in there, nice and comfortable in there. Which is an attempt to assume that the man really is still going on somehow. Which is an absurdity. See, that's why Yahadus is against this. See? That really goes back to the Egyptians. The Egyptians buried people in the tombs with their slaves and with everything
gold.
Gold, everything. See? That's just a little more. When people today, it's funny. When people today look at this, they look back at the whole last year with the Tutankhamun and everything. They look at these. Wow, look how they big pyramids, and they buried them with these stuff and this gold. It's crazy. Look at this, absurd. It's absurd, huh? But why don't you go down to the funeral policy and find out people spend thousands of dollars on a coffin to put a guy in the ground? Is that, that's not absurd? Why is one thing more absurd than the other? Just as absurd.
Same thing.
The same exact thing. The only thing is, you're not going as far, but the idea is the same idea. And the truth of the matter is that I was wondering why are so many people interested in Tutankhamun? What's the big interest there? You know? Why? You see? The answer is, it's basically identification. It's an identification. Say culture. What does culture mean? Well, they're not just interested in culture. Culture has to be even more specific. The reason is because culture means it is a society which had something in common with our society. Right? Now, what does have in common with our society? Same thing. The desire for wealth, money, gold, number one. That's where they identify. And also the desire for immortality. You see? So they are very curious about how these ancients, who had the same basic desires as they did. Of course, their desires are more primitive. In form, they're more primitive. But not in quality. And the quality is the exact same thing. And that's why some people are so curious to go down and find out, look how they did this. Because it's really their own wishes that they're curious about. Because they're curious about, they're really curious about their own wishes, which are the same as those ancient Egyptians who lived at that time. But Yahadis came along, and Yahadis wiped it out. And he took us, Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt. It means he took us out of all the nonsense. Not just physically, but took us out of all the nonsense of Egypt. The Egypt was a center of civilization at that time. It was the most prosperous country. A fantastic, in terms of, if you look back in history, in terms of a civilization at that time, they were unbelievably, had unbelievable amount of, very cultured, tremendous amount of, you'd open it up and it would come out, you know? So you have all you to go flush the toilet. That plumbing, that real
part of the God below.
Very what?
They
probably had pipes that went underground. They had underground pipes. That had worked out. They had, it's unbelievable. And they used to go up in the Nile. You can go up and down the Nile without. You can go up and down the Nile with a boat. How could you go up and down the river with a boat? How could you do? I mean, what? Centered around it, yeah, because they had the natural goods, you know.
They had a natural.
Sure, that what?
Allows to
light that
today?
Yeah, I assume so. I don't think it changed. They had the wind blows with the opposite direction of the river.
Always. So, always.
Wasn't
from the sea.
An A river?
The wind usually comes from the west. What?
Any river?
No.
Some
rivers
don't even blow.
That's right. They were lucky, and sometimes we lost
sight of it. Is just
Nivel Peh. And I'll tell you something. I recently discovered something on Nivel Peh that I didn't know myself until last week. I'll tell you what it is. Nivel Peh, the Gemara says, is one of the worst of errors. The Gemara says that a person who speaks Nivel Peh, even if he has 70 good years ahead of him, so God will convert it to 70 bad years. Now, what is Nivel Peh? What is Nivel Peh really? Nivel Peh doesn't mean dirty words. I mean, I'm going to go through with you the whole thing. I want you to listen to the whole thing. Nivel Peh, the Gemara says, means a person goes to a wedding. And at the wedding, somebody makes a crack about the chosen and kala. You know what they're going to have to do. So the Gemara says that's considered a very low thing.
What Gemara is that?
The Gemara is in Iksubis on Daf Chesetes. Daf Ches, I think it is. Ches. That the Gemara says, call him a novelist piv. Anyone So Gemara says, "My va'ed yodin etuya." What does it mean that God's hand is still stretched out? Everybody knows why a kala goes to the chuppah. Okay? So he says that even if a person had 70 good years ahead of him, God will make it bad. Now what does it mean? It means, like I said, it means that a person who makes a sexual reference to individuals, and so far as a sexual act is concerned, that's a Nivel Peh. That's considered a Nivel Peh.
Okay?
What?
That's
to do with sexual. Like people by a wedding, if you'll notice, they always joke around. Make a joke around. Some joke. They're going to have sex that night, you know? Gemara says that is considered Nivel Peh. making a reference to people, it's degrading, well, it's not only degrading, it's something which has to do with the person's sexual fantasies, you know what I mean? And to give in to that emotion is considered a very base thing. See? It's considered a very base thing. Okay? What?
That's like a basic animalistic behavior.
Basic, right. But it's like verbalization of the animalistic behavior, see? It's verbalization. Okay? So it's giving vent to verbalization. You understand what I mean? You understand it?
I understand. It's a funny term.
Yeah, well, the point is like this. See, the thing is, you have to realize, and God, I'll get back to that in a minute, though. Let me just go. That's the basic halacha. But that does not mean saying dirty words, like F you. Not talking about saying dirty words. It's not talking about
saying that. That feels good.
Oh, 1 second, slowly. Let me get to that. That's what I wanted to tell you. That the thing is like this. Really, halachically, saying a dirty word is not called nivdam. And I mentioned this once. Saying a dirty word. But, however, because you're just using the word, it's just a word that has to do with the sexual act. It's another word for the sexual act. There's no, that's not called nivdam. However, you have to understand, the Rambam says in the Morne Huchim that why is Lashon HaKodesh called the holy language, Lashon HaKodesh? So the Rambam says, because it doesn't have any dirty words. What's the pshat? There's no word in Lashon HaKodesh that means sexuality. You see?
Why is it considered dirty?
How do you say intercourse? You say bia. Bia means coming. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean to, there's no word for sexual intercourse. If you say, for instance, the shachav ishosa. He lied with her. Doesn't mean there's no word for intercourse itself. You see, so the Rambam says that that's why it's called Lashon HaKodesh. Now, why is that so? Why is that so, really? Because while it is true that productivity is a part of creation, a very important part, and it's part of the will of God. It's the will of God. But nevertheless, it also is something in which man manifests his base animalistic instincts and uses his energy towards physical enjoyment rather than towards intellectual enjoyment. And it's the area which is the most, which man's energies is most directed in terms of the physical. You see? That's where most of his fantasies are. That's where, and unfortunately, this is something which takes a person from a high level where he can be using his mind to understand knowledge. He uses it on the contrary to satisfy the fantasies of his instincts. His instinctual fantasies. You know what I'm saying? Life of Taiva. So it's an area of Taiva also. Now because it's an area of Taiva, that's why the Torah doesn't use any word for it. You see? Even though it's also an area which is part of the universe, an important part of the universe. Ah. Now, so the Rambam says that that's why the Torah went out of its way not create any words for that. Alright? And until recently, I always thought like a word like, I always thought myself that a word like, let's say S-H-I-T, I felt it wasn't, that doesn't have to do with sex, right? It's just excrement. But the Rambam says no. The Rambam in the Morne Huchim says that there is no word in Hebrew for that either. You see? Because the word in Hebrew is, Tse-Yasecha. I just saw that last Friday night, as a matter of fact. I simply didn't know. So he says that. So I was wondering why, because that never occurred to me to be a dirty word, because that's excrement. What's wrong with that? It's not a sexual, not sexually related. But apparently, you see, the truth of the matter is that word really is sexually related in the unconscious. Study the unconscious, and you'll find that there is certain it is related sexually. Sexual stage. You see. So even that reference in the Torah apparently is prohibited. Something. So therefore that word, now things like this, the Rambam says that this is halachically, like I told you, halachically the real nivdam is only a reference to specific individuals involving themselves for pleasure in sexual enjoyment. You see? That's really strict logic. But the Rambam says philosophically a person should not even, you see from the Lashon HaKodesh, philosophically a person shouldn't even verbalize words that have specific connotation to sexuality. You see? One second. So that while you might say that if a person would say F you, he didn't violate Nivul Peh, nevertheless it was a philosophical violation. And many times a philosophical violation can even be worse than a halakhic violation for the individual. I'll give you an example. There is no halakhic violation against being drunk all the time, right? But what is worse, a person who's drunk all the time, or a person who didn't daven with so much kavana? Davening without kavana is not allowed to, right? Alachim asa. So even though in one case I'll show you a person who violated a lovely thing, but definitely his state of perfection is still superior to a person who it's not. I mean, I'm sorry. His state of perfection, right, even though he had a halakha violation, his state of perfection is superior to the individual who might not have had a halakha violation and still indulge in drunkenness. What's the reason? The reason is because Torah, you cannot legislate perfection. See? Perfection cannot be legislated. Torah can't say, God can't say, I want you to be perfect. It's impossible. He can only give us a system of law through which this system of law you'll be able to reach perfection. You know what I mean? But the purpose is definitely perfection. Now, the Rambam says that part of this perfection is not to verbalize words that have exclusive sexual connotation. That's why if somebody, if a person says a few, did he violate something? He didn't violate halacha, but philosophically it definitely is a violation. It's a philosophical wrongdoing. And Yahadus maintains an interesting thing. Yahadus maintains that things that are said with your mouth verbally have an effect on the soul. See? That's the basic premise in Yahadus. That verbalization affects an individual's way of life and his thoughts. Because when you verbalize something, you make it real. See? If you verbalize, you make a statement which has, which it might be something you don't even believe. You don't even believe to be correct. But when you verbalize it, you're giving vent to a certain emotion. You're making it a reality by verbalization. Once you do that, then you're inclined to follow that. See, the emotion gets a stronger foothold. Now, when people sit there and sit around by a chasna, if they joke around about the chasna, go, it's not, what they're saying right then and there is that is really the good time. See, that is really the good. That's the good thing in life. Truth of the matter is that the good in life is knowledge, and that's not really the good. That's only should be done for productivity, like you mentioned, I mean, for procreation. See, so actually, what they're doing is they're verbalizing something which is not true, which is a non-truth. That what they're verbalizing is that type is good. You see, in a hidden way, they're verbalizing that. Now, when you verbalize that, that strengthens that emotion and it reduces the mind's ability to see the truth that is not so. That's why Yahadus maintains that verbalization is a very important thing. Yahadus, what a person says with his mouth is very important, because when a person says with his mouth is an expression, a further expression of what he thinks in his mind. And if he verbalizes something which is not true, that means that that non-truth is gaining in terms of his personality. It's gaining a stronghold, a foothold on him. See,
the one who those words.
That's a philosophically is wrong to say. Philosophically is wrong. Philosophically is wrong. Definitely. You see, definitely is wrong philosophically. You know who also maintained that way? Plato also maintained that way. Plato said also that same idea, that what a person says affects his soul. That's why Socrates said before he died, he said, when I die, he says, don't say Socrates is being put into the grave. He says, because that's not me, that's just my body. See? So the thing is that verbalization, he maintained, verbalization is an important part of a person's ideas. Whatever you say, it strengthens your belief. If a person says a true idea, then he's strengthening that aspect of his personality that's in line with a true idea. If he says a falsehood, it strengthens that aspect. So therefore, it's a bad thing to verbalize something that's not good. You see? That's why philosophically a person should not say those words. But halachically, certainly, the main violation is to make a sexual reference to individuals partaking in an action. It doesn't have to be the time of the chuppah. Anytime. See? That's real middle ground. Why do you think those words are banned, so to speak? You know, from certain areas, certain places. You wouldn't hear it in Congress. You wouldn't hear it. You know what I mean? Why? Why won't you hear it? The reason is because people recognize that those words have to do with sexuality, and that's why they. You understand what I mean? Those are like the word, like if you take the word "fu," right? Call that a word. Now that word has an exclusive reference to sexual performance.
You would say you couldn't say that word as a choice
either. I would say yes. I was surprised to see it, but I just saw it last Friday night. Ram says that even excrement is considered wrong. I mean, I never thought that way, but I see it's wrong. It's a mistake.
I think
it's
a language
being
more and more used.
That's a society
that, you know, that teaches the using it, you know, it's unbelievable.
That's true. Well, that's our society's, our society's society of Taiva. There's no question about it. Our society maintains that what is the best thing in life? The best thing in life is money and pleasures, physical pleasures, sexual fantasies. I mean, the person goes to the movie. See, right away, that's the whole philosophy. And philosophy is nothing more, our philosophy, the American philosophy, is nothing more than an expression of the way a person's emotions feel about life. It's not an organized philosophy. It's not a philosophy of mind. It's a philosophy of body. That's what it is, essentially. It's a philosophy based upon the body. And that's what it is. I mean, that's how deep, it's as deep as the most superficial emotion. Yes?
Isn't there an
Isser
of Lashon
HaShuk? That's Lashon HaShuk.
That's what it is.
That's Lashon HaShuk. But the Isser is not a halachic Isser. It's not Nivopeh. It's not Nivopeh. I want you to understand. It's not Nivopeh, but philosophically it's wrong. Philosophically it's wrong. And something else I wanted to mention was that in terms of the yeshiva, in terms of being a Ben Torah, it definitely is a Chil Hashem if a fellow uses those words, in a place where people are hearing. It's no question, then you're involved in Chil Hashem. That would really be Chil Shem Shemayim. Chil Shem Shemayim is the worst of every person can do. That would definitely be Chil Shem Shemayim, because the Rambam says Chil Shem Shemayim is not measured by the Avera. Even if a person is a big person and he doesn't pay his bills on time, so then that's Chil Hashem. I didn't do anything so terrible, pay a little later, there's no issue in it. But the answer is it's wrong. Any injustice, slightest injustice, be a chil Hashem. Anything wrong, slightest thing wrong, be a chil Hashem. And this would definitely be a chil Hashem. So, I was told that in my yeshiva that the fellows don't, I mean, I never heard it, but I heard told my yeshiva that a lot of the fellows don't care about their language, you know? It definitely is wrong. Definitely is wrong. Definitely is wrong philosophically. If it's even philosophically wrong, then it's a degradation, see? So that's why I say, if you're doing something which is 100% all right, and people look down on you, then that's their problem. You're not much you have to worry about. That's right. That's not our problem, see? That's right. Well, the point is, like, the truth of the matter is the person has to look to reality. That's it. Yes, you hear? Okay. Well, Rove is the cloud. Okay. Rove is my goal. And now, these are like this. Let's say, for instance, Bezin makes a Xera. And they think that most people will be able to keep it. But then they find out that people do not keep it, so the Xera is bubble. There's no more Xera. Okay? However, let's say, for instance, they make a Xera and they think that most of the people will be able to keep it. But then that Bezin passes on. And then the next Bezin comes up and finds out that most people don't keep it. That they made a mistake. See? So then the second Bezin has the right to nullify the original Takan. Now the question is, why do you have to have the second Bezin nullify the original? If you're going to tell me that the second Bezin found out that people aren't keeping it, right? So it should be nullified. It should be null and void by automatically. Just like when the first Bezin's around and people don't keep it, it's nullified. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they have to nullify.
What?
They have to nullify.
Yeah, why do they have to nullify? That's the question. In other words, the first Bezin doesn't have to. No, they don't have to nullify anything. It's just nothing. It's just both. Yeah, that's right.
Once they find out people aren't keeping it, they don't have to nullify.
What?
That's
right. What? That's right.
Finding out itself is
a no reason for the Bezin to go ahead and
That's right. The answer is very simple. Is there any other question?
Yeah.
You have to. Bezin passed a law. And they thought that most of the people will be able to keep this law. Right? You don't think? It says that the second Bezin can never break the word of the first Bezin unless what? Unless it's bigger than the Mechach Minyan. The Rambam asks a question, how can it be bigger than the Minyan? It's always 71. How can the second Bezin be bigger than the first 71 and 71? You can't have 171 greater than another 71. Right? No, the halacha is what? What is that saying? Okay. Anyways, that's what the Rambam says.
I remember it's a half a time.
Not that's no rush. Anyway. So the everybody should know, you get that one? The second base, you can only break the first base in Sakana if this is
what is the
No, the answer is no, it's not difficult.
Because see the charm of this. The reason why you can't revoke, the reason why, you see, it, to make a takana, you need a technicality of Shimon Zephyr. Shimon Zephyr is nobody can't make a takana, see? But the reason why you can't revoke, the reason why the second Bezdin cannot revoke the words of the first Bezdin, unless the government of the Chacham or Minyan, is a halacha. It's not a halacha that it's a gzera. It's not an inherent qualification of the second Bezdin. The second Bezdin has to be qualified such and such a gzera kasa. The halacha is a, you understand, it's not a gzera. The second Bezdin has to be qualified with XYZ. If you don't have XYZ, that's it. You see, then you may have a good question. First Bezdin is always X, second Bezdin is never X plus. So you can't qualify the second Bezdin when the first one didn't. You understand what I mean? The halacha is the second Bezdin, the reason why the second Bezdin can't do it is because the halacha is a Bezdin can never pass a takana or break a takana, can never act when rationality dictates that they're acting in error. You see? You understand what I mean? Why can't the Bezdin, what's the halacha of the Bezdin can't be, why can't the Bezdin do it? Why can't the Bezdin break the takana if the first Bezdin was Golem and Chacham Minyan? What's the reason? Practical reason. Because since the Golem and Chacham Minyan, so there's more reason to assume that they were right. And Bezdin can never pass a takana when there's more reason to assume that they're wrong. You understand what I mean? It's not a technicality in the Bezdin. It's a halacha that no Bezdin can do anything. A Bezdin can never act. You see? A Bezdin can never act unless we can see rationally, we should assume that their actions make sense. But if there's a rationale that dictates to us that their actions are wrong, or that there's a good reason to assume they might be wrong, you see? So then Bezdin can't act. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, Bezdin can never act in the blind. Bezdin has to always act when it has all the facts in front of it and when we can assume that they're right. You understand what I mean? So it's not a halacha that a Bezdin, the second Bezdin can't be involved with the first Bezdin because you're pitting Bezdin B against Bezdin A. And Bezdin B is bigger than Bezdin A. If that was the case, you're right, there's no answer to it. Because Bezdin B is never bigger than Bezdin A. Bezdin B 71, Bezdin A 71. So if you're weighing the two Bezdins, you're right. If it's a qualification in the Bezdin itself inherently, you'd never be able to do it. You can't say one's bigger than the other. They're both the same. But if the halacha is not that way, that's not the halacha that it's Bezdin A in two teams, Bezdin B against Bezdin A, and Bezdin B has to be better than Bezdin A. That's not the halacha. The halacha is that a Bezdin can never act when all the information is not in front of it. That's the halacha. That's why it has to be God with a Chacham Minyan. Really, any Bezdin could break another Bezdin's takana technically. A Bezdin can do anything he wants today, he can change it tomorrow. There's no problem. Why can't the second Bezdin break the first Bezdin's zera? Not because it can't, it has to be stronger than it, bigger muscles than the first Bezdin. Do you know what I mean? The halacha is that a Bezdin can never act when it doesn't have all the facts. Do you know what I'm saying? You follow? Now, since the first Bezdin is greater than Chacham Minyan, right? So rationality dictates that the second one doesn't know the reasons of the first one, so it's acting in a blind. You know what I mean? So therefore, the second Bezdin can't do anything. Because Bezdin cannot act when it doesn't have all the information. When there's reason to assume that they make a mistake. And when there's reason to assume they make a mistake, if the first one is more intelligent, then there's reason to assume that there are ideas there that the second one doesn't know about. So the second one can't act without all the information. Therefore, the Rambam says, to the first one, it doesn't matter who is officially on the Bezdin. As long as you had a scum of tremendous chachamim in that thought, or masking with the first Bezdin that agreed that they said what the first Bezdin did is right. You know what I'm saying? So you have the same problem for the second Bezdin. What do I care if the people, you understand? If it's our luck of Bezdin B has to be stronger than Bezdin A, you'll never get more than 71 in any Bezdin, so the two teams are always equal. Right? But if it's halacha that the second Bezdin can't act, not because the second Bezdin has to be stronger than the first to break it. That's not the halacha. The halacha is that a Bezdin, the second Bezdin can break any takana, even takana's Moshe Rabbeinu, no problem. Bezdin has the right to break and make all takana. However, there's one qualification. The qualification is Bezdin has to be able to act with all the facts in front of it. Now, if the superior Bezdin passed the Xera before, there was superior intelligence involved, then Bezdin can't act. Why can't they act? Because there's reason to assume that all the facts.
Where's the principle of the same question?
No. So then, it doesn't matter. You don't go by the number who are on the official Bezdin. If, let's say, for instance, you had 71 in the official Bezdin, right? But you had 40 Einsteins who agreed to it. So you're going to say now the second Bezdin, you're going to say the second Bezdin is, the 71 also could break it? Just a second. Who are the ones that agree with that first Takana? The ones that were involved in that first Takana? The intelligence, the brains that were involved in that first Takana, we can't even understand them. So we don't even have the facts. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what's officially on the Bezdin. The idea is that the second Bezdin cannot acts in the blind. That's Talach. You know what I mean? You understand what I'm saying? If the Talach in Bezin versus Bezin, you see, it's a battle. The two teams come up. They come down the field, you know, two teams. You have to have the bigger team, which is the right. The small team doesn't have the right. Then you'd be right. How can there be a bigger team of 71 bigger than the first team of 71? That's impossible. 71 is 71, right? But if it's not a halacha that the second bezin has to be bigger in order to break the first card, any bezin, the second bezin to break doesn't make any sense. No problem. There are no limits. There's a practicality limit. What's the practicality limit? That the bezin can do anything, but there's no one requirement. Fellas, you can do whatever you want, but make the corners, break the corners, go in your hand. However, you must act intelligently. And you can't act on things you don't know about. You see? That's the gun. So therefore, if the previous bezin was 71, right? Same amount of Z's, right? But there were 40 geniuses outside the bezin who were there, and all three agree with them. Right? So now the second one is acting in the blind just as much as the first one had 71 geniuses. Doesn't matter. What does it make a genius on the bezin or agree with them outside the bezin? It's a practical thing that the second one's acting blindly. You know what I'm saying? That's the reason why I'm
going to do that. Let's say you had second
beta. Yeah.
Was smarter than the first
beta.
Right.
So
what's
71? Is there a point?
Has to go,
probably, you know?
Why? The whole thing is
flat
and shorty. Why
should he be? The reason is because that's a practicality thing. Because the Allah is after Rabbi Mahatma. See? You go bust a row. You always go bust a row. Why do you go bust a row? One G is smarter than 40 people. You're right. It is true that one Einstein is smarter than all the physicists we have today. Right. But the fact remains that in practicality, it doesn't always work that way. Because it's hard to determine, first of all, who is really the smart guy. You know what I mean? In practicality, there has to be a practical law. You know what I'm saying? We got a dozen 71 guys. So you can't say, well, we'll go by who's smarter, right? Who's going to sit around and argue who's this guy smarter than that guy, and I'm a little smarter than you, and he's a little smarter than me? You know what I mean? It's practically...
Let's
see
the first
page. Right? Why do you have all this time? Skimu, kibbu, a chutzuba, skimu, kibbu, what's a chutzuba? You know? Around means like this. You see, there's two types of arguments a bezin can have. Now, halacha is you go bust a rov, right? How do you go bust a rov? So they get together, they know same, no same, and halacha, as long as before. Until what? Until they all agree. Actually, skimu, kibbu, rov. Oh, that's actually a scheme of Kuban. Oh, Yandu Luminion. What's Yandu Luminion? Yandu Luminion means they say we're going to get together and take a poll. Take a vote, right? Okay. What's up, chat? You see, there's two types of disagreeing. I can disagree with whether Bezin should pass the Xerah or not. That's one type of disagreeing. But I agree that the Xerah is possible, to pass. In other words, I disagree. There's two types of argument. I can say it's not outrageous. It's not crazy. You understand what I mean? Let's say, for instance, Bezin would say they want to pass a Xerah, then on Shabbos you should strike a match. So you're going to say, we'll get together and we'll decide, and we'll be under dominion. You see? We'll see. Rogue people say you should be a strike a match on Shabbos, you should do it. And probably that would be under dominion. That would mean it's outrageous. But Xerah is impossible. You know what I'm saying? I'm speaking theoretically. But you understand what I'm saying? Below Chilkubo means that they didn't object that the Bezin do something Shalok HaLacha. You know what I'm saying? There's two types of disagreements on a bezin. One disagreement on a bezin is, look, I think you're wrong. I think the reason is you're wrong. But he asked me, is it a zera? Yeah, I mean, it's a zera. You know what I'm saying? But there's another type of disagreement where I say the bezin is crazy. They're doing something shalok halacha. You know what I mean? Let's say the bezin wants every week takana. Every week we should be chazer at 5 o'clock on Wednesday night. Right? So say, well, I disagree, we'll get together, I'm a dominion, we'll see. Most of them say we should do a little good. That's impossible. Because then there's going to be our model dominion. The other guys will say, hey, this is crazy, this business is nuts, we can't do this. Right? So there's two types of disagreements on a business. One type of disagreement is, I may disagree with you, I'll say, look, I disagree with Marshall, I think he's wrong. But I don't think he's crazy. In other words, what he's saying has substance to it, but I happen to be of a different opinion. But another disagreement is where I say, what the hell, with that guy, he's off the wall, the guy's jumping off the roof. I don't disagree with him, I think he's crazy. You know what I mean? That's what the Rambam means. The Rambam means when you count the Chochma and Minyan, when you count the Minyan goes, not by the Minyan over there isn't the Minyan that thought the Xerah was good. But the Minyan is the Minyan that thought the Xerah is plausible, acceptable of Xerah. You understand what I mean? That's Shavuot Kilkubo. They didn't say Shavuot. What? Doesn't matter, in and outside. That's why you just count up the Chachmei Ador. Because as long as we, the Chachmei Ador would disagree with us, they definitely would have heard about it. They would have said, hey, the Xerah, which is absolutely, completely ridiculous. It's crazy. You see? Then you would have known that the Gaon would have objected to it. Otherwise, in other words, they really didn't, what's the shot they accepted it? It's Kimu, the Kiblu, the Velal Kiblu. What it means is three categories. Kimu means that they really accepted 100%. Kiblu means that they agreed to it initially. Kiblu means initially they didn't have any thought about it, they accepted it later. And Lo Chilkubo means that they didn't argue that it seems crazy. So what you do is these three categories are considered acceptances in terms of meaning. You know what I mean? You have to have more than that. You follow? And that's why you count. That's why what I told you before is correct. When you count is the Chachmei Hador, because it's not halacha that the second bezin has to be bigger than the first bezin. Halacha is the second bezin can't break its takana unless it has all the facts. You see? Unless it has all the facts. Oh, now how does he know how to have all the facts? You have to consider every person that agreed that this zera is a passable zera, regardless of whether he would have made himself or not. That's a separate question. You know what I mean? So therefore, you count the whole bedroom, plus you count the whole chachmei hador. You know what I'm saying? We're not talking about the ones, it's not just the second bedroom, we're not talking about the ones that believe that were for pro zera. The ones that felt it is a good zera, it's a zera. Even if I disagree, I still say it's a zera. That's unbelievable. You should get together unbelievable. But if it was an outrageous thing, let's say for instance it was outrageous, and chachmei hador said, hey, this bedroom is a bedroom that's being done shalok halacha. You see? Then we wouldn't accept it. Then you don't have any problems. Then you wouldn't have to break it. Then you wouldn't be able to count the minion of the Chacham of Priya's door. Let's say the Chacham of Priya's door said, this Bezin was crazy. They had no right to say Shalom. Right? Shalom Kalam. Then the second door, when it breaks the Zera, doesn't have to worry about the minion of the Chacham of door. You know what I'm saying? That's what I mean. The Chacham of door doesn't mean the Chacham of door, but then you have to count the people in your right. You have to count the people who are pro-Zera. You have to know how many people want to have you pro-Zera. You have to know how many people that are in the door are pro-Zera. You see? The Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam just says that you count the minyan Chacham of door. Zem minyan Chacham of door. Sheskimu the kibbutz of Hashem doesn't look like a ball. They didn't argue on it. Right? How do you know what they're pro-Zera? That doesn't mean they're pro-Zera. It means they held that the Zera is plausible. It is a Zera. We accept it as a Zera. See? Even though they might not be for it. So you have two different types of objections. I can object to what you're doing because I think I would do it differently. That's one thing. If I can object to what you're doing and say the man is out of mind, that's a different objection. You know what I'm saying? That's why whenever Bezin gets together and under dominion, it means that they agree that it's possible to be there. They say, oh, look, I'm against it. You're for it, right? All right, let's take a vote on it. What does it mean? It means that it's possible. I agree it's possible. I'm against it, but I still agree it's possible that it should be Zera. You know what I'm saying? But if the Bezin thought, let's say those guys, the Bezin was passing a din, let the Bezin made a takana, we should just go kill people once a week, something like that. Say, oh, I'm in Luminion, see, that's right. Yeah? Say, no, Shalom, we can't even be on Luminion. See? You know what I'm saying? That's what you have to remember. Therefore, when you want to break a zero of previous Bezin, you have to have more numbers, not more numbers than the ones that were for the zero. They have to have more numbers than the ones that accepted it as a zera in order to break it. And that was the whole Chachmei Hador accepted as a zera. So you can't rule the Chachmei Hador. That's how far the precaution goes. Far precaution. Precaution is you cannot break a zera, not just in front of the people who disagree with it. Now, you know how you're not only coping with the people who agree to disagree, you're coping with everyone that accepted it in that generation. Was it ever so much a zera? Regardless of people are pro or con, but the moment the Pesach came out, can you see that the Pesach came out from the original line, did the Pesach, everybody accepted it. Pro or con, doesn't matter. Now that acceptance, you have to have more people that are against it. If, in other words, you can't reopen a case. You can't just reopen a case. Look at, for instance, because otherwise in the case there's no end to it. If you're going to tell me it's just a matter of who's pro and who's con, so I'll tell you, in the first generation, the 36 were pro, and then the 34 con. Right? And the next generation will reopen it again. Take it, you find the guys who know. There's never a psalm. There's never a psalm that way. You can't break a zera from a previous Dora just because you disagree with the, you happen to be against it. That was passed already. That's it.
You have to break it. In order to break it, you have to be able to demonstrate that it's a worthless thing. So you have to break, you have to, you know what I mean? Otherwise every bezel will go reevaluate the same takana, the previous bezel made. That's absurd. Bezel decided, it sucks. The second bezel can only break it if they think it's an absurd thing. Now, if they think it's an absurd thing, so then they have to cope with all those who accepted it. It means even though they might disagree, but the bezel didn't object the previous bezel, they all accepted it, all the Hachmei don't. But it's a practical thing. It's not a lot of that bezel B is bigger, stronger than bezel A. It's just that bezel B can't act unless they have all the facts. Unless all the facts are on their side. Fact on this side has to be, have to have bigger in the what do you call it, in numbers. You know what I'm saying? That's what it shows. Yes. That's
nothing of shots. You're saying the vote is only insofar as it's certain, not insofar as it's there's no
possibility. Right. Exactly right. That's okay.
So why did God create the world? Right? I mean, since God has no needs, so therefore there's nothing that he's missing that he has to do. Like a person wants to do something. Why does a person want to do something? Because he's missing something. He wants to eat breakfast because he's hungry. So at that one time he's missing something, then when he eats breakfast, he feels satisfied. Now you cannot say that in relation to God. You can't say that God at one time was missing something. He's missing the world. That's why he created the world. That gave him a satisfaction. It means before he was dissatisfied. See, whenever a person wants something, desire by definition means that you're missing something. See? That's why I mentioned in one of the things we went through, why the life of the physical enjoyments cannot be a good life. Why? Because we mentioned that there's what difference does a person eat? A person is involved in eating. Tired of eating, right? Okay, so now he will only enjoy the type of eating as long as he's hungry, right? As long as he desires the food. But desiring the food is pain. You see? Because desire means you're missing something. By definition, that's what it means. You're missing something, right? So therefore, he can only have pleasure as long as he has pain. So the enjoyment of eating only exists as long as he has the pain of hunger, right? So therefore, he always has love. There's no mind, there's pleasure to it. Right? You see that? You understand that? That's what we say, the life of life cannot be a good life. It involves desire. And wherever you have desire, you must have pain. Because desire means you're missing something. Right? Now, in relation to God, God never is in a state of pain. He's never in a state of missing something. So the question is, how come he created the world? Right? So the answer is, there's only one answer. What's the answer? The answer is, the what?
His nature to create.
That's right. Part of it has to do with his nature. His nature is to create. Okay? You can't ask what gave him his nature. It's like asking what made him him, who created him. His nature is part of his existence, right? Part of his essence. And his essence is necessary. The existence of his essence is necessary, which means, like we said last time, you can't ask why does it exist. That's the way, in other words, there is an existence that is necessary and has a certain nature. And his nature is to create, so the creativity, we're just the result of his nature. Alright?
You couldn't say the nature of the nature.
What?
You couldn't say the nature of the nature.
What do you mean nature is needed? No.
Nature is
no. No, you can't say that.
By God?
Yeah, by God.
You can't say that.
You can't.
No, because God has a need.
You can't say that it's his need. He has a need. So he has a need would mean that he's a part of
something.
Yes.
Why
is
he created
when
he's not created?
When he did? You can't say when he did. There's no time relationship to God. Time only exists one in the physical creation. Time is something which goes along with matter. Once you have matter, you have time. If you have no matter, you have no time. So you can't say why God. You can't say when. There's no when in relationship to God. Because God, when are you going to say? When did he begin? There's no time relationship then. You can't say when he began. Since his existence is necessary, there never was. You can't say he's living 1,000 years, God's living 1,000,000 years, billion years, 5 billion years. You can't say when.
Before the earth, there was nothing, right?
No, not sure there's nothing. Before the universe, you can't say.
There's always been creation.
Our knowledge is based to a great degree in our imagination. And our imagination always has with it the idea of before and after, so it's hard for us to get rid of these ideas.
If there's an amount of creation, we shouldn't really be here right now.
Because it's infinite amount of creation, we should have been wrong enough.
Why?
Anything that's infinite, it's like Hashem himself.
Yeah.
It's not in that.
No, 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 that's only if you use time. That's only if you use time.
Okay. But we're in this realm of time.
We are. This earth is in the this existence.
If we were talking about God, that said that if it was happened to rain and something was supposed to be done in existence, it would have already passed.
That's if you speak in relation to the world, to the universe, because the universe is subject to time.
Right.
But God isn't subject to time.
Right.
So we have to, in other words, God himself is no thing of time. You can't say what would have happened to rain. There's no thing of time in relation to God. Now, I mean, the universe is a good question. The universe has to say, the universe is
the universe.
Yeah, that's if the universe, there's nothing else besides the universe. Because the universe is time. But God is. The universe is time, right? But God is outside of the universe.
Right.
And God is outside of time. So therefore, we can't say that we should have been here already. You understand what I mean?
Is this what we're talking about when we said the thing that had to be infinite and went back in time?
That's only if you're talking about the universe.
Which
is subject to right time. Because the universe is subject to time. But if you're talking about God is outside the universe, outside of time. So you can't say that anymore.
Right. Okay,
the
other question.
Now, but the only thing is that I want you to know, so you said that he has a compulsion to create, right?
Right.
It's not a compulsion. Something which flows from the thing's nature is not a compulsion.
Right. The only time you talk about it, that gives him, like, no, justification.
It's
not
sure.
It's the nature
of water. Right. If you do something that, if you do something that, that's what we say. We say learning Torah is something which is within a person's nature. It's a natural action. It's not a compulsive action. It's within a person's nature. It's a natural thing for him to do. Other things are contrary to compulsion. See, okay, so it's not a compulsion as far as nature. Okay, now we've all got a question?
It was about where is the tie between the soul and the person? How does the tie break when the person dies?
All right, that's a good question. Where is the tie between the soul and the body? And how does that tie break when the person dies?
I always like to distinguish between the soul and the memory. The soul is the memory. And also about...
Let's take one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Thank you.
Go ahead.
God has been creating things all the way back.
No, you can't say all the way back. There's no change all the way back unless you can do that.
I see what you're getting at. I
can't say all the way back. All the way back is only when you've got the physical matter.
What did you create that he could have created things that aren't physical matter?
How to enjoy learning. It isn't. The thing is that unfortunately the way most people have been corrupted by education, different things. Now, like for instance, like people have been taught that it's a painful thing, so they're associated with pain. But really thinking per se and working on an idea is not a painful thing. It's really an enjoyable thing. But many times we don't realize it because we're trained to think it's painful, you know what I mean? But once a person gets into it and really sees what it is, it's not painful.
The only thing, I guess, is learning...
That's because the nature has been corrupted by the school system.
Which means
that they are taught that learning is a painful thing, obviously. Now I say that any school, any time a school has kids that do not enjoy learning, they're failing in the main objective of the education. Yeah. From the fact that you see that kids enjoy their education so much, and there's something wrong with their education. Now, the truth of the matter is that they don't know that because they themselves don't believe. Because they themselves find studying a painful thing. They think it's a painful thing which is necessary. You know what I mean? Yeah, this is exactly the opposite. Something which is enjoyable, which gives the person the greatest enjoyment. Just the opposite. But the thing is that the way people are trained, of course, is you train them. That's right. You know, I'm
trying to break that.
That's right. And the thing is, in the yeshiva, what a person's concentrating on is to break that emotion. And to relearn, to think of and rethink his whole idea. And to learn to enjoy an idea. I mean, you have to practice it a little bit because you've been it's a rough thing, right? You know what I mean? Like you have to take an area. Of course, we have, like Bradley mentioned with the translations, of course, that's very difficult. I mean, you can't say that that's pleasant, because just learning words is not a pleasurable thing. And, but that's not the essence of learning. That's an accidental feature. You know what I mean? Why you have a difficult word. Now, what you should do is, like, let's say you isolate an idea. You have a problem in Gemara. I mean, everybody has a problem once in a while in Gemara, right? And take that problem and think about it Before you go into the problem, just think about the enjoyment of that you're going to have out of thinking of the problem. You know what I mean? Like your mind, you should get used to thinking of the act of thinking as a as an enjoyable process. You know what I'm saying?
Is that to break the pain?
To break the way you've been trained. You understand what I'm saying? Because you have to relearn, revise your thoughts. You know what I'm saying? Like you sit down in a chair, you know, and you say, now I'm going to enjoy an hour of thoughts. You have a nice problem, you think about it, your mind works. You know, and you have to relearn all those habits that you've been taught that this is a painful thing. And learn to enjoy it. And learn to enjoy it. But you have to practice. See, in order to learn to enjoy it, you have to associate in your mind the idea of pleasure with the activity. Because the, you have to understand. See, you have to counteract the fact that the idea of pain has been associated with the activity all your life. You know what I'm saying? Now, what you have to do is to reassociate the idea of pleasure with the activity. Once you associate the idea of pleasure with the activity, you'll be countering the whole effect of the association of pain to the idea. Now, Einstein said a similar thing. He said that he could never, when he went to college, he was never able to study while he was in school. And he used to do, what he used to do was, in the summertime, try to go through all the courses in math before he got there. Why did he do it? Because he said that he is positive, he says, even though learning is an enjoyable thing, it's really fun, he says, however, something which is forced on you, he says, you can't enjoy it. He gave him muscle. He says, if you take a bird of prey that enjoys ripping and eating, he says, if you would take that bird and force it to do it, it would eat it. It would detest it. Why? Because it's being forced. So the same thing with education. When you take something like learning, studying, which can be so beautiful, so enjoyable, and you force it on an individual, you have to hate it. That's why he used to study his courses in the summer before it's forced on him, before it became a forced process. You know what I mean? So that he could enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm telling you guys. The same thing you have to do. But it's a practice. It's a good thing this thing came up. This is an important thing. It's something you have to practice. And you have to consciously practice it. You know what I mean? If you take a problem, and you have to sit down consciously and associate the fact that you're going to enjoy now a few minutes, whatever it is, 10 minutes, a half hour, it doesn't, the time doesn't matter, it's the idea, not the time, not the quantity. And you're going to enjoy the act of pondering this idea, this area. You know what I mean? So you associate the idea of pleasure with the activity, instead of, and you're breaking the old association that you had all these years. Now, as long as it's not unconscious, you can do it. Okay, that's it? You know what I mean? It's a very important thing. You say, okay, well, that's a bad association, associated with something painful, right? Again. Right. So you can't get away from it. To think about the ideas, right? Now, when you think about those ideas initially, then all of a sudden the mind can't think of anything more. But a lot of times, an hour later, 2 hours later, a new thought will occur to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the way.
Mm-hmm.
Does that happen to you? There, there has to be an input. And if you study there are books on psychology that make studies of scientists, you know, kind of with real breakthroughs and everything, they ask them how they think and everything. Most of them say the exact same thing. Practically all of them, I don't know if anybody doesn't. They say the same thing. They say there's a time of pondering, you know what I mean? When they have the idea, they ponder and ponder and ponder, and then all of a sudden it just comes.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
I guess it's not good to get mad when you can't get it.
Right? No! What's that? Madhua Lodhivara. Right? And he was turned around and he saw the burning bush. He says, why doesn't it become consumed? Phenomena attracted him. Very phenomenal. He said, no, not the answer. The phenomena. Hey, you know, attracted to it like a magnet. He was attracted to it which was against everything that he had known and he had studied in terms of the world of nature. He said, what is that phenomenon? How does that work? Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Marshall's been very patient. You know, this is a big philosophical problem. How it works. See? Alright? Any suggestions?
Well,
Any suggestions? All right. Let me start you off on the perch. Okay? We say that the soul is that part of man that thinks. Right? Part of mind that comprehends. All right? And we mention also that comprehension, understanding does not deal with physical objects. That's what it is. Understanding, it's an amazing thing, but understanding does not in any way deal with physical objects. As a matter of fact, when Einstein came with his theory is so abstract that people said, you know, he's not dealing with realities anymore. You know what I mean? So he wrote in one of his books, I think it's The Meaning of Relativity, he said, it's not any more abstract than a person who is a geometer and talks about a line that he could never define. Because the points on a line, no one ever saw points on a line. And then what is a line? A line is made up of a series of points. What is a point? There's no thing. You're not going to find all the points. You go around and find something in the ground or a point. It's an idea of the mind. A line is an idea of the mind. So that everything that we analyze, the mind can't see a physical. If the mind wants to understand a triangle, the mind doesn't see a physical triangle, but the mind can't see it. You can feel and touch, your senses can deal with a physical triangle. But the mind's eye doesn't deal with a physical triangle, it deals with a certain abstract essence, which is a line coming a certain way, you see angles, certain things. Now that essence that the mind deals with, you follow? It's not to be found in reality. It's not to be found in reality. You will not find such a thing. You will not find a circle that the mind deals with in reality. So it comes out that the mind is dealing in a different world than that which exists in reality. Isn't that true? Right? Because the mind's lines don't exist in reality. The mind's circles don't exist in reality. They're ideas, right? So these things that don't exist in reality, the mind deals with, right? It's dealing in a different world. Yet we see that there is some relationship between the world of the mind and the world outside. Right? The proof is that you have a television, you have a car, you have different things. Now those things are physical things. So the mind, somehow or other, while it deals in another world, nevertheless, that world is related in some way to the physical world. Right? One second. We'll get to that. I'm just dealing with the two worlds, right? So you see that there are two worlds here. There's the world of the mind and there's the world of the physical. And these two worlds, yeah, are definitely not the same. No one can say they're the same. But nevertheless, somehow or other, like number. Number really doesn't exist. Did anybody ever see a number? Feel a number? Touch a number? Hear a number? You can't, right? There is no way that your senses can perceive number. It's purely something of the mind. Correct? It's purely an idea. Now, where we got that idea from, we don't know. But there's an idea of number, and not only is there an idea of number, but numbers work so well in reality that everything we do in the most advanced spacecraft is all based on numbers. It's impossible to have anything not based on numbers, right? So we see that while there are two worlds, there's the world of the mind, there's the physical world. Somehow or other, there isn't an interrelation between the two, right? Because one affects the other in some way, right? Okay. Now, there is then a connection somehow between the physical world and the world of the mind. Isn't that true? Okay? Right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
The world of the mind. Let's just say there was nothing physical, right?
Right.
Let's just say that. I mean, how could the
mind
see something if there wasn't
physical? Okay, hold on. Just a second. Okay. Now, but the that is true. What you're mentioning is true. Everything that we perceive, the world of the mind that we experience, is always a result of the world of the physical. Right? It's like a Peter. Correct. All right. Now, we say like this. In other words, what we're saying is, now you could say, of course, that it's always needed. You see, that this is the world of the mind always requires the world of the physical, right? Yad just maintains no. Yad maintains it's not that the world of the mind always requires the physical, but it's just that in this existence of ours, the world of the mind cannot function without the world of the physical. You understand?
Yeah.
But that in reality, in other words, a certain condition which prevents it from functioning without the world of the physical. However, this condition does not always have to exist.
You see, you could say two ways. You could say that the world of the mind we see cannot function without the world of the physical, right? Or you could say, no, the world of the mind really would be able, has the potential to function without the world of the physical. But the way we are in this existence, the condition of this existence is that it can't. There's something that precludes the possibility of the world of the mind functioning without the world of the physical. That's what Yadis maintains. You see? Judaism maintains that it's not that inherently the world of the mind can't work without the world of the physical, but it's just that in this physical existence,
it's like a vehicle to the world. Or
the physical mind also, the brain in other words, is something which needs in order, which the soul needs in order to function. You know what I mean?
So the mind inherently doesn't need the physical.
Right?
The mind inherently doesn't need
the world of mind inherently doesn't.
Right.
There is another world of mind. See? There's another world of mind.
What?
The two things, right? Like, let's say, for instance, all the matter on the two things you go at. Let's say, take a look at two keys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which are more or less the same, right? So say, I look at these two keys, and I think to myself, well, they're both equal. See? Now, what is equal? What is equal? Where did equal come from? Did you ever see an equal? You never saw equal?
It's a mind procedure.
See, that's an idea of the mind. So that the physical world, while the physical world is not mind, but the physical world is something which reflects or makes your mind think of ideas. So the physical world is a stimulus. You see, in some way, it mirrors ideas. You know what I mean? For that reason, we say like this. We say that the truth of the matter is that's why the philosophers look down upon the physical world. Because they said the actual physical world mirrors ideas, and it's the ideas that really guide the physical world. You have an idea, you work out an idea of how to do things, how to make a racket. And then you put those ideas together, the racket emerges.
But it's not your fault that you're making the ideas together, it's just collecting the ideas. And then what part of you is putting the ideas together?
That's a separate question. Which parts? We'll get into that in a minute. But the point is that you see now what we're saying is that insofar as our physical stuff is concerned, there is a certain relationship between the physical body, which absorbs these physical objects, and then the mind, the world of the mind, takes these objects and converts them to ideas. You see? We don't know. You say, how could you possibly say that the soul has no place for the soul of a person in his body? So it's relegated to space.
Not physical.
It's not physical. How could it be in his body?
And how could another person have the soul of somebody else?
Right? How could what?
How could you say one person has one soul, another has one soul, he doesn't have a different soul? It's trying to make it physical, but saying it's different.
Very good. Very sharp. How do you know that?
How?
How do you know that? Yeah.
You're showing place, you're showing quality,
right.
And you're showing quantity.
Okay. Very good, very good, very good. That's a little question answer. Okay. Now, the thing is like this. That the answer is, the answer is not your question, but the answer to the question that was asked is how could it possibly be that the soul is how did it possibly be that the soul is in a certain body? It means the soul has position, has place, right? Now the answer is the soul is not in a body. The soul functions via the body. But you can't isolate the space and say it's over here, it's over there, it's over here, it's over here. That's ridiculous.
But using the body,
there's no soul inside of you. The soul just is related to the body functionally. That's all. But you can't say space because it's not a special entity. See? Okay, that's an abstract idea. But anyways, that's what Yadis maintains. Yadis maintains that it's not the way we see only. In other words, we see the mind working with the body. The average person would say, well, look, okay. So you see that the soul can't operate without the body. You know, we say the soul could operate. It has the potential to operate without the body. But the only thing is that the body, its connection to the body prevents it from functioning without it. You see? Now, the thing is, that's what the Pasuk says. When Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to know God, the God says, man cannot see me as long as he's alive. Why? Because as long as he's alive, his mind operates via the vehicle of body. See? And since it operates via the vehicle of body, so it's always attached to the physical. In some way, even no matter how abstract the man can be, the most abstract guy in the world is still only a certain amount of steps away from the physical. See? But after death, then the limitation of the physical is gone. Once the limitation of the physical is gone, then the mind can really soar and really can be in the true world of ideas without limitations. You see?
There's no way for it to absorb knowledge.
How can the mind continue to absorb knowledge after death? Look, there's a lot of questions. I don't know. The problem with philosophy is that
people, you know, don't take one question at a time. What's the next question you want to ask?
That was.
He said, there's a soul. How come if you hit a guy with the head, he can't think? Why can't a soul work? Okay? Why can't the soul work? Aristotle answered that many years ago. He says that if you look at the eye, the eye really takes an image and puts it and plants it in the brain. The brain really is what the image registers, right? Now if a person is old, when he gets old, his eye might get weaker, right? So when his eye gets weaker, so what happens is the image that's implanted on the brain is not as clear anymore, right? But if you would take a new eye from a young fellow and put it in and transplant it into this old guy's head, right? Then his image on the brain would be the same. Because only the fact that the image on the brain isn't distorted in the old man, it's the eye that's distorted, right? So the eye is the vehicle through which the image registers on the brain, right? So the same thing with the mind. The mind is a vehicle through which things register on the soul. Now, if you hit a guy over the head, what you're doing is like you're knocking out the guy's eye. You're not knocking out where it registers. The same thing with a guy over the head, you're knocking out the medium through which the soul could see it. So you're not knocking out the soul.
You got
it? You got that, but how about the soul departing?
Okay,
now what do you want to know about soul departing?
Well, the soul leaves the good.
Right.
Then
For instance, we say that the hand can't function without the brain. Right? Which means there's a functional relationship between the hand and the brain. Right? Now this functional relationship is not just a spatial relationship. There's a spatial relationship between this box and the table, right? But it's not a functional relationship. There's no interaction. There's no function going on, right? Between the two, right? You see, there's two kinds of relationships. There's a functional relationship, and then there is a spatial relationship, right? That's clear, right? Now the point is that while it is true that in order to have a functional relationship between two physical objects, there must be a spatial relationship also. Because the hand couldn't be related to the brain functionally unless there was some point of contact between the two. But since they're both in the world of the physical, the only way they could be related has to be through a physical thing, right?
Yes.
Okay. So in order to be related functionally, they have to be related. That's related spatially.
The head, the soul, and the spiritual relate with the body and the physical.
Okay. All right. That's a good question. That's a good question. And how does the soul, which is spiritual, relate to the body, which is physical? Okay? There has to be some special relationship. Is because both of them are physical. You see? However, if one of them is not physical, like in the case of the soul, then by nature, its function does not depend on a physical contact. So therefore, it could be related to the function of something else, even though there is no physical contact. You know what I'm saying? That's a only special relationship. If you're dealing with the function of an entity which is by nature not special.
Not physical.
You understand what I mean? So therefore now you're just dealing with the function of each entity. You know what I mean? You follow? Let's go. Those same ideas. But you go further beyond those ideas. There are ideas beyond those ideas also, which in this life we can't see because they're too attached to these basic ones. Now then you can go one step beyond that, you know what I mean? Okay? Until you get to the most abstract idea, which is God. And God is the most abstract idea behind all ideas. In other words, as you keep going, you get further and further away from physical, you keep going to more abstract, and the most abstract idea of God. Well, one second, well, let me see if I can answer this question. That's an important question over there. Come on. What we're saying is that there's something which is extremely difficult to
deep.
That's all one saw after that.
What was that?
That's what he keeps mentioning, but it's very difficult.
Ram says that once and after everybody goes.
He doesn't say that. He just mentioned sort of stuff like that. Like, in passing, he says, man, most difficult subject to go into.
The same place that his person has a soul that lives on after he gets his
right.
own tailor.
That's right.
Which is his own tailor, he makes it simple.
That's right.
What about the
own being makes it simple. Because his own being. Right. If you only have its own being, how can it be separated from another being which is not physical? No way you separate. What identity is that?
That is true as well. That is the biggest question I'm going
to have. Okay.
What about soul reincarnation?
Oh, we'll try there tomorrow, okay?
I have some days
tomorrow. All right. Well,
I'll take it. We'll take it.
You'll take it. esoteric. But the thing is...
No, you once I said that
the equal is unconscious me, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. For the guy who really feels he should be in a position to do it. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make sense. Like, it would make sense for the guy to be self-office as the President of the United States, right? Found out unconsciously he really is. Okay. Which would make sense. It makes sense in a certain framework, right? Now, why is this guy acting as if he's in that framework when he really isn't? The answer is he is. You identify with that figure. So therefore, you will always go around and, start and say what you would do. You know, then it makes sense. Otherwise, it makes no sense. To have a kid. Why does he have a son? That's Badaska, his own son, that you carry on system. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a fine thing. Why didn't I have a disaster from this wife, from Sarah? Yeah. What's wrong with
the son who wanted it?
Wasn't
that
here? Wasn't that here? Before you talk about
this, I...
But the point is, why is it necessary for my children? Because by the, what do you call it, by the person of Sarah.
Yeah.
Tear up wrong, and then my wife struck up and murdered, and I was wrong. The symptoms you mentioned didn't want it.
There's also a problem.
Why? Three of
one.
Gilliam was from, eventually he was referred to as Father Searle. That's the Avalon Gilliam. Yeah. Alright? I mean, that's what you have to say, no? The Avalon Gilliam didn't mean the
Avalon. What was he before? What is the name? Was that the
Avalon Gilliam in his lifetime. So that people are following. But the real Avraham Gaon was the future. The Avraham Gaon was probably Sura. You know what I mean? That was the real Avraham Gaon. So that's why Rashi says that it was Avraham Eloi Tzitzchak. It was only after Shinik Roshimai Avraham. Yitzchak was the result of the bracha of Avraham Gaon. That when later generations will identify with...
How many later generations are we talking?
The reason is because of because there hasn't been identification of common thought. If you're going to have so many different people, then it wouldn't be there'd be no identification for any common thoughts. There wouldn't be any identification. So you tell me, but let's say, for instance, Talmudim, let's say a Talmud, and then but you see if it went from one Talmud, then it would go another Talmud, it would be half the thing. Then it would never.
Why is that so?
It wouldn't be no emotional identification. The whole thing, see, you had to build up to Mitzrayim in order to have Matan Torah. And the Klal Yisrael Mitzrayim were only able to maintain themselves, like you pointed out. Identification, because they came from one source.
Right.
So it had to be one source, Ben Achaben. That's what it had to be, the source. Yeah, it had to be one source. Yeah. One Sunday for another. To have one entity. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any Bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. There would be no specific identity of Klal Yisrael. In that same group, that'd be, I mean, that's what Rashi Meir said, a school of three legs, school of one leg.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pshat.
Mm-hmm.
Three legs means that there was three, in other words, in this group, the group identifies with three leaders. Okay?
Three parents.
What was the Akedah? The Akedah was the Oath of Kashyat. The Oath, you could be slain for Abraham Avinu to sacrifice the son. All the Akedah was the same thing? You see? But the Pshah is like this. The Pshah is that the slain was by Abraham Avinu. Abraham apparently wanted, why did Abraham want it? So what Abraham wanted? Because he wanted to be the instrument, as Avraham Hashem was, that he should be the instrument of the instrument of Klal Yisrael. He should be the instrument of bringing about God's will, right? Now, the thing is like this. But there was always a possibility, there was always a danger that it was just an expression of his own egoism, an extension of his own self. So that's why the Akedah really was that the Akedah was the thing that broke that emotion. Because in the Akedah, he had to be sacrificing.
Did it break the emotion? Did he have the emotion to break, or just?
It says that it's all going into noise.
The what?
Zogman of Mice. He was crying tears while he did it. He apparently went against his Okay, next question. Okay.
Shpasti. Yeah, the don't take from the Knanim, right? And that's what the Kibbutz, you know, the Shpasti. Anshe Risha, Bad Boss Russia. I want a real Russia, I can't take a chance. Well, that says, blah, 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 right? That he gets a somebody from his family, right?
Right.
Which means his family's good, right?
Right.
And over here it says, Rashi says that his family, the father was in Russia, the brother was in Russia, the
Okay.
He was in China. Well, the type of vicious in which a person is, in which, like, for instance, see, the type of vicious in which a person uses his intellect, uses his mind, okay? But he uses it for the wrong purpose. But basically, he's an individual. In other words, he uses it as a means, not as an end. Right? So it's true. He doesn't recognize what the good is. So therefore, he goes after the wrong thing. But still, the man is involved in using his intellect, using his mind. You see, such a person, if he would know what the good is, he would be able to use his mind for the good.
True.
But there's another type of vicious. Where the individual is completely away from the use of the intellect at all, completely. The use of the mind is completely gone. They just live according to the senses. They live a life of the senses. Such vicious is impossible to overcome. That's why he said you should go back to my mishpacha. Because really, Lavan Arami was an intelligent guy. Wasn't some dummy. On the contrary, there wasn't a rami for nothing. Very smart, shrewd guy, right? Shrewd guy, you know, take the other guy's pants off without noticing it. But the thing is, the dach takes chachma. So the guy is involved in the chachma. The only thing is that the end purpose of it is wrong. The end purpose of the good is the end, that which he thinks the good is mistaken. The chachma is involved in using his mind, involved in using the chachma. Now, if the guy would be shown what the real good is, then he'd be able to do it. But then there's another kind of person who lives like a behemoth. And Stami has no shaft to head at all. Stami is like a behemoth. That type of rishis, there's nothing you can do about it.
That
means that he's sunk in the biological process. A person is sunk in the biological process and is simply worthless. Hereditary, certain types aren't. That's what he said. He says that there are certain type of rishis that's hereditary, certain type of things. These things, he gives them these examples of what anybody says there, those things, they say Dario, Tina, and Nikama, and
Kilo. What's
Kilo? In Russia, for two reasons. This is kind of a little better. First, in Russia, two reasons. First is in Russia because his instincts overpower him. He's basically an instinctual being. And his instincts are in control. That's why he's in Russia. He has no power of instincts. Another type of Russia is a person has power over his instincts. But the only thing is, that he has power over the instincts. The only thing is that which he thinks is that his ideas are wrong. That which he thinks is the good is not really the good, but he has control over the instincts. Now he says that the instinctual defect is hereditary. In other words, if you come from two parents that are basically instinctually controlled, then the kid will also be that way. It's Mustafa that way too. But if the other thing, why is Mustafa that way? But if unless, of course, sometimes it doesn't go from the immediate parents, it goes back. But if it goes from the parents, that's what it's going to be. That if a parent is rooted in, let the parent is rooted in taiva. So now he's rooted in taiva, so it means that the instinctual force is overpower, dominator. So then the kid will also have that same thing.
Is that because he's raised that way? Or
no, biologically. Like the Rambam says in the Maariv, he says, certain people can never learn medicine. Why? Because their instinctual nature is too powerful. Ace of such a person. Ace of the person is instinctual.